on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football. Hello and welcome to The Sound of Football. Well, it really has been a week this week, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I'm joined, as usual, by Terry DeFellin and Jan Bilton. And you are listening to the shortlisted Best Podcast of the Year 2014, aren't you?
Best podcast / radio station.
Yeah,
radio
yeah.
program.
Radio program, yes.
Not a station.
Not a station.
Not yet.
Yeah. Plan for world domination starts here, listeners.
The listeners know too much.
It's all very exciting, isn't it?
It is very exciting, isn't
and
it?
And out of the blue.
Yes, it is. It's a lovely, lovely, lovely surprise.
I mean, because I don't remember us asking anybody to nominate us.
Huh?
So, I mean, it's done by nomination. People contact the SF and nominated their favourite podcast, writers, podcast, whatever category it was.
Yeah.
So a number of people, presumably our listeners, have taken the time to contact the FSF and recommend us.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Which is amazing.
It is amazing. And one of the great things about it is when you look at the list that we're on there, it's actually makes you feel quite proud about what we actually do here, because we're up against things like who are we up against?
Well, Alan Davis has got a podcast.
Alan Davis there, TalkSport there.
TalkSport's podcast is in there. A BBC podcast is in there.
And Guardian Football
in there.
Yeah.
And which, I mean, really is sort of like podcast zero for football podcasts.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And of course, the Football Ramble, which is incredibly popular, very well established, been around even longer than The Sound of Football.
Yeah. Mm.
And with, thousands, certainly if their Twitter handle is anything to go by, then with thousands and thousands of listeners.
Yeah.
We don't, and then there's us, as I think it was Andy Ruckle who said, and then there's three blokes sitting around a table talking about football. And it's quite humbling, actually. And yes, I think that we probably should thanking you, whoever you are, for being so kind.
Yes, and thank you to all of our listeners who actually keep coming back for some reason. So we don't hold out too much hope, but it's lovely to be in the mix.
The victory is in the shortlisting.
Yes,
it's a popularity contest. It's done by public vote. We do not have the number of people, supporters to win.
Yeah,
and that's absolutely fine. So we can enjoy the award ceremony.
Yeah,
and we will enjoy.
We don't have a deposit to lose either, do we?
No, we've got nothing to lose, except perhaps our dignity if we have too much to drink during the award ceremony.
Horse has already bought.
Cheers.
We should really get back to our bread and butter rather than just like patting each other on the back, shouldn't we? Really. Because otherwise we're not going to win anything, are we?
No.
We're not going to be asked back again, are we?
No.
Well, that's probably going to be what's happened after the party, won't it? But, this week we're going to talk about the upcoming international round of fixtures. And we're actually going to take quite a sort of parochial view. We're just going to look at the home nations, aren't we? Well, home nations and Ireland. Because there's actually been quite a good start for a lot of the teams out there.
Mm. I think we've done, collectively.
Yes.
And the Republic. Have all started very, very well.
Yes,
and we're all firing on all cylinders. Really,
yeah, you both have interests in Northern Ireland as well as England, don't you? So you can sort of like extend your interest there.
I believe that I can. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I've got family in Antrim.
Ah, we could be related.
Oh, we'll have to have a discussion about that.
we won't record. You didn't know this, but Holly Willoughby is just about to come through the door now. Did you see how I contemporised there? You see, I would usually just said Cilla Black.
Cilla Black. It's very good.
No, you very see, good. I've got my finger on the pulse,
You have, you're down with the kids. Young people, yes. With the kids who all watch This Is Your Life.
You know your crack TV.
I know the ITV too. Me and Dapper laughs.
Very good.
Oh, yes. No, he's not very good.
No, he's not. I meant it was very good because it... Yeah. because of the news today.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well,
what's happened to Dapper Laughs?
He got cancelled by ITV2.
I thought he hadn't actually started his show yet.
that's the power of
the he got cancelled.
Yeah, I didn't even know who he was until he was on.
No.
It was on Channel 4 News before I left. Not the lead story, I'd like to point out.
I had no idea who he was until last Friday when all this whole thing happened. Yeah. Because, you know, I've compartmentalised myself culturally. I mean, you know, I'm cracking 50 and I can do that shit now. Yeah. And I thought, these people are of no interest to me whatsoever. But anyway, I found it curious. But you're saying that he's had a show commissioned
and then cancelled within a week.
I'm laughing, but it's funny. It is funny. Poor guy.
It was funny, actually, because they were interviewing a comedian on Channel 4 News who said, I don't know what all the fuss is about. It's only on ITV2. It could be in my cupboard and get more viewers.
Yeah,
he was suitably chastised by the by his opposing number. But there you go.
Oh well, there you go.
That was just to explain Graham's reference.
Thanks.
So
we've got. This extended weekend again. This new format of the qualifiers coming up, and it starts off on Friday, and probably the tie of the weekend for local interest anyway is Scotland, Republic of Ireland. Terry, do you think that having such local interest there is a benefit, or do you think it's going to be more of a distraction for the teams involved?
I think in this instance it will be of a benefit to them because I don't think it happens that often. Mm. It's Jose Mourinho has said it, and Arsene Wenger, in fact, in the past has said it. Both expressed the view that London clubs have a tough time of competing for major honours because of the sheer number of local derbies that they have.
Yeah,
and I suppose that if you have too many local derbies and things get too personal, that in fact it can get in the way of the business of winning matches and winning trophies. But I think in this instance that that Scotland and Ireland will use that extra derby element to it, and I think we can. I mean, we'd call that a British derby to an extent,
a British Isles derby, yeah.
Not just in terms of the national borders, but also in terms of the location of the players. A lot of the players you would think most of them will play in the British Isles. They'll play in England and they'll play in Scotland, probably, and there'll be a good smattering of players who play in either country as well. There'll be a familiarity there, and I would imagine a pretty tasty game of football. I am looking forward to that game. I'm going to be watching. I certainly won't be watching Germany versus Gibraltar on the other side. That's a bit of a waste of time. But.
Do you think that there is a slight possibility that the Germans could be like a bit hungover after all the 25th anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down?
Yeah,
this is the showpiece game for the world champions for the whole set of celebrations, isn't it?
Yeah, versus Gibraltar. UEFA's fixture list, not perhaps. Not someone didn't enable the pathos function on the fixture computer.
Yeah, unfortunately they're not in the same group as Russia, so you couldn't really
I think though it will be regardless of the opposition. I think the fact that the German national team get to play so close to that anniversary, I think that they might do something not necessarily special for it.
I'm afraid I don't. I'm sorry. No. I'm really sorry. I doubt very much it will be in Berlin because it's Gibraltar. I would imagine it would be at a smaller venue, but I'm afraid to say I don't know. I should have checked that. But I mean, the national team have been meeted and greeted by the great and the good today as well. There's been pictures all over Twitter of them meeting Angela Merkel, and so there's obviously been some ceremony. Mm. And in fairness, they are playing Gibraltar, so it's a good time for them to do it because. They're not going to need much preparation because, although they lost to Poland in the last round, they're not really going to be expected to have too much trouble against Gibraltar and probably will field a weakened side. So, I think that there'll be, there may be an air of celebration. But I don't know. I mean, the German culturally, they're quite funny like that. Once they've kind of like done something like that, they tend to sort of like, move on and they're not dwell. I mean, if it had been us, we'd be, going on about it for months afterwards. But
like winning a war or something we'd go on about for years.
Yeah. Or remembering at the very least.
Yeah.
Up against the Scotland Republic of Ireland game, Northern Ireland are away to Romania in Group F. Now, Northern Ireland have started off fantastically well. Hopefully they'll be able to keep it going. Do you think that the qualification this time around with a much bigger field for the final tournament is gonna help and gonna make it possible for Northern Ireland to get through? Yeah.
Well, you know, regardless of that, you know, I just pleased to see them doing so well.
Yeah.
If it is because there's more teams in there, so possibly slightly weaker opposition, then you know, so be it. I mean,
it looks like a winnable group. Greece got a high pot placing in that group.
Mm.
And Northern Ireland got quite a low pot placing in that group. But they're actually turning that on its head a bit at the moment. So
it's nice to see that, though. It is nice to see that.
There's not a lot of teams with tremendous pedigree, recent pedigree.
Not recent pedigree, no.
I mean, Greece are probably the only ones that do, having won the European Championships in 2004.
Yeah, but they've only got 1 point out of their first three games.
Sure.
As well, so they've really stuttered to begin with.
And they're missing Sokratis Papatatopoulos as well. He's not going to be playing.
He's not going to be playing.
An injury.
He scored, didn't he, at the weekend?
No, he didn't. That was Christoph Kramer's own goal.
Oh, no. He scored in the Champions League.
Yeah. Yes. He sustained an injury against Borussia Mönchengladbach yesterday, so he's out.
Oh, right. So that's more problems
more
for Greece.
For Greece. Hungary, obviously a fantastic name from the past, but still very much struggling to get their shit together again. And similarly, Romania, who I don't know a great deal about, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, and then there's Finland, who never qualify, real rarely qualify, really.
Yeah.
So Northern Ireland are in a happy place there. And surprisingly, they find that, to a degree, they find themselves top. But I think it's because they gave Michael O'Neill a good crack and they let him fail.
Mm-hmm.
And now they seem to be reaping the benefits, perhaps not getting...
Well, they're away to Romania, who are currently sitting second. If they come back with a point, you've got to think, that really puts them in a good position.
So, I mean, that's the other thing I think that we're seeing with some of the smaller nations throughout this qualifying group are doing quite well, because they can see that there's an incentive for them to genuinely improve. Because although they may not necessarily qualify, it's now no longer just really a question of finishing top of your group, which... You know, a lot of the nations would probably think, well, we're never going to get top. We might get second, or we might get third, in which case we're in with a shout, you know. So I think that that's certainly added to the excitement of this qualifying campaign so far. It's certainly that, and the schedule, I think, has helped enormously. I think that the extra berths, because of the expanded tournament, has helped a great deal to add an extra competitive element to it.
I think it's fair to say that Northern Ireland probably, before this campaign started, would have looked at their group and thought, this is a field of sides, if you like, that could easily turn us over. I don't think from their point of view, it's an easy group. I think that, you know, they're all evenly matched. In fact, you could even say that nine times out of ten would thrash them.
Mm.
But I'm just really pleased to see them doing so well.
I think you're right. But I think that's one of the good things about that group, is the fact that you look at that and you don't know which way they're going to go. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, you've got the Faroe Islands in there, but
yeah.
they have caused a few upsets in the past themselves. But as far as minnows go, they're probably the better ones of those lowest ranked sides,
and
definitely improving.
Yeah,
and no longer necessarily whipping boys, but still very much minnows.
Yeah,
but they've professionalised quite well, and they don't get hidings like they used to. Yeah, I mean, it's just an example of why it is a good thing to have an open qualification rather than a sort of pre-qualifying, because it has allowed teams to genuinely get better.
Of course, the other extreme, you've got a complete wonky group like Group E, where England have got a very favourable draw and are actually doing the business in it.
Well, England have been fortunate in that the seeded team that they got was Switzerland, who I suspect probably because they've not, their coach Otto Hitzfeld resigned after the World Cup, and there may be just catching them just as they, the Swiss, are catching their breath. And there's just a slight period of transition. And the new coach, it hasn't quite worked out, and it's allowed England the opportunity to just steal the march over them. And, you know, beyond that, it's, you know, by England standards, that's those are the rest of those teams. There are certainly teams that we would that we would compete with quite well. So we were fortunate in that respect to have drawn Switzerland. Because if we'd drawn, say, Italy or Germany or something like that, then it might have been a different. Yeah. Well, maybe not Germany, but
Switzerland strike me as a team that have got a few players that look really good. That, you know, that could step into quite a few Champions League teams.
Certainly, Granit Xhaka, Jadon Sancho,
yeah,
Liechtenstein, Ricardo Rodriguez,
yep,
Diego Benaglio, Josip Drimic. Yep. They're all and top quality players.
And then they have Johan Giroud.
Yeah. Maybe that's where.
Yeah, that is exactly
but
it.
But you're right. They have a more than healthy smattering of top quality players. But perhaps, like a lot of teams in that category,
yeah,
they maybe don't have the full range of them.
Yeah.
But you know, they did finish in the second round. They've been a top ten side. They were seeded in the World Cup, and they're no mugs. They're a decent side, and England deserve a great deal of credit, I think, for having gone out there and done them 2-0. And despite the persistent antagonism between England and the English press, I really don't know what more England fans could want from this qualifying group. So
And home to Slovenia on Saturday should be straightforward, shouldn't it? Really? It will probably end up being a 2-0 win.
At Wembley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two late goals.
At Wembley, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that is a really dangerous group for England. Not that I don't think they'll qualify, I think they'll storm it. But I think that given the failure in the World Cup, the uneasy relationship with the press that you mentioned, that England have got every chance of going through that, and suddenly the press start flag waving, and they're going to get to the next round, and they're going to meet a team like, for example, Northern Ireland, who've actually had to really work hard to get there, not just stroll it, and get an absolute spanking. And then, you know, you talk about how far they fell after the World Cup. I mean, they could really, really fall far after this.
Yeah.
Because this would be a false dawn.
England, the press will start waving the flags if England sneak through into a playoff place on goal difference. On goal scored. On alphabetical order.
Alphabetical order, yeah.
And we're still going to the tournament thing. We'll go on and win it.
No, but that's why I think it's a really dangerous group. I think if you know, you can see it playing out that way.
Yeah.
That they get through to the next round and play, you know, I don't know, Russia, and get absolutely turned over.
I like the fact that Roy Hodgson decided at relatively late notice to bring in younger players that suddenly became available to him, and he didn't be conservative, and he picked those players, and it backfired for him, I'm afraid, undeservedly, in my opinion, in the World Cup, because they were too young and too inexperienced. No game management, not just you know, men against boys in many respects, to be honest with you, in the World Cup. But that experience will set them in such good stead that should they qualify, that I think that they've got every expectation of getting out of their group in the European Championships. The sad thing is that the likelihood is that they are probably, even at their pomp, they're probably at best a quarter-final side. Not really much more than that. And I imagine that will not be enough for a lot of people. But England at their best, I think, should be regarded as dangerous dark horses.
I think you're right.
I think that we can be happy. We should be happy with that.
No, I don't agree with that. Courses. But I think that England's challenge, and it always is not just the kind of the hangover from winning the World Cup 40 odd years ago, but it's the problem with the press. And the second that they slip up, it destroys them. And you know, we may well have one of the best crops of young players we've had in a generation. But the point is that it just takes one headline, and those careers can be ruined, and that's really sad, really. I'm not sure whether the other countries have got... Well, I think the British press are unique in how nasty they can be.
What was your take on the whole Raheem Sterling thing, supposedly being too tired to play for England?
In the last game.
I mean, because he came into a lot of stick from the press. Well, he did, Roy Hodgson did, but a lot of it was actually pointed straight at Sterling, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's 19, isn't he?
Yeah.
Every time it comes to certainly the early season internationals, whether it's a friendly or it's a qualification game, you always find that the players are pulling out for one reason or another.
Yep.
Someone's got a calf strain, I've got a bad back, I'm tired,
or
whatever. And I think that early in the season, the players are thinking about their clubs and wanting to get cracking there, and they don't really care about a qualification game that they think that their team will sail through anyway.
Mm.
So my reaction to that is that, you know, it's not surprising because this happens all the time.
I think they got a fair amount of criticism in the wake of that, because I think Roy was perhaps a little bit too honest about how that went down, suggesting, you know, I mean, he's tired and, you know, so I decided to leave him out. And I mean, that what seems like probably quite a sensible management decision was kind of seized upon. It is worth bearing in mind that during international breaks, the English press, and this is the same with all domestic press all over the world, they no longer have, you know, half a dozen or a dozen games to discuss and write about and cover over the course of the weekend. They've just got the one, and then maybe others from Scotland and from Wales. But, you know, in terms of the English press, they've just got the England game. So, you know, if you're looking, I mean, we saw an example of just how desperate they can get to have something to report on and fill all those column inches and fill all that content, because there was really nothing else to say, because England are doing well. They're not playing spectacularly well, but they're doing well. They're not conceding goals. You know, they're being quite boring. And I guess, you know, if you're looking for something to fill headline space and fill content, then that was that. And it was an example of just how the dilemma that the modern media have these days is that they are told, right, we've got X amount of hours, column inches, content that we need filling, and now you've got to go out and get it. And they're like, well...
And as well as that, there's probably the direction that you know, it's got to sell. If it bleeds, it reads, as they say in the newspaper world. And, you know, they're not going to write something nice and all informative. They're just going to write something that, you know, that sells the papers, really.
Well, we've had this discussion. I'm sure we've had this discussion before. Mm. We've speculated that there are people, football fans, who don't actually like football that much, but they do love the whole salacious nonsense that goes around.
Yeah, the soap opera. Yeah,
and then of course, you know, if Raheem Sterling actually does start to go off the boil, then they can say, oh no, he can't handle the pressure. And the relentless pressure of the media got to him.
Your pressure.
Well done. You've made another story when there wasn't one.
You're right. It lays down the foundations for countless I told you so think pieces, you know, you know, in a few months' time, you know, or even in a few days' time, if he has a bad game.
And I suppose we have to finish up if we're looking at the home nations and Ireland with Wales, who are away to Belgium on Sunday.
Did we talk about Scotland?
We did, because they're playing the Republic of Ireland.
I did think that for a second.
Yeah. Oh, Scotland. Oh, yeah.
I'm not that anti-Scottish. I didn't go to Lewis or anything at the weekend.
No. Well, you know. Anyway, sorry. Where were we?
We're in Belgium.
We're in Belgium.
Yes.
Yeah, Wales with Belgium, and Wales with a decent enough chance.
Mm.
Certainly with the start that they've had.
Well, that's a tricky group. That is a tricky group, because although Israel rarely qualify for anything, they do cause problems for people who are trying to.
They're tough hombres, aren't they?
Yes.
They are.
I think and Bosnia now they seem to sort of finish up in the top places of these qualification groups.
Mm.
Yeah,
with ease now, don't they?
So. Yeah, absolutely. But Wales have had a very good start.
They've
got the benefit of a motivated Gareth Bale, who I think possibly is feeling a lot better about himself now that he's settled in at Real Madrid and has also won a Champions League.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, he can now go in there very much as a leader of that team, and looking with the players, I'm sure, looking to him for leadership.
Mm.
That will inevitably backfire from time to time, but he's playing with such vigour and such ability at the moment that I think certainly in international football it's quite possible for him to lead that team, and when he plays, really affect the outcome of a game in ways that you don't often find in team sports. Mm.
However, that said, he is one man, very, very good at what he does, whereas Belgium are a solid team. And I think that, you know, he can carry Wales so far. I think he probably has to accept that he's not going to win the World Cup with Wales in his career. So he's probably hit the pinnacle of his career already. But, it'll be good to see him up against some world-class players.
Bosnia have won yet in their three games. So, do you reckon this is just a blip, do you reckon? Or do you reckon it's...
No. Yeah. That's not a blip.
Yeah.
I mean, and by any definition, I would say that's not a blip. I mean, they are obviously having problems. I know they had some young players that have come through, Kolasinac and Ikan.
Mm.
No, Kolasinac, sorry. And Dzeko is still there. But, to what extent? I mean, they would be a thin squad.
Yeah.
And maybe to an extent they're a bit tired after the World Cup, and they've just not been able to gather themselves for this for this competition.
Although Wales are top, I mean this game away to Belgium is a bit of a gimme for them, isn't it? Really, I mean no one's going to be too surprised or really upset, unless of course you're a Wales fan, if they come back losing 2-0.
No, as long as it's no more than that, I think. They lose to a respectable scoreline, they'll go back and everyone will just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, well, it's Belgium. Mm. But at the same time, I'm certain that they will be going out there thinking that, this is a team they can have.
Yeah, but what can't be ignored is the fact the only team in that group with a 100% record is Israel.
Right. Yes.
They're at home to Bosnia.
Yeah, which, carries fair amount of intrigue, does it not?
Yes, it does. Mm.
So, it's all good stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Good weekend of football. Sadly, I'm going to miss most of it because it's my wife's birthday.
Well, happy birthday to Mrs. Bilton.
The current Mrs. Bilton.
Yes.
The way this is going. Mm. Yeah.
But then it'll be your birthday at the end of the month, won't it?
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah. Big one as well, isn't it?
30-10. Thanks for that, Graham.
Yes. Get your birthday wishes in quickly there, listeners, because otherwise you might just go into hiding.
Hibernation.
Well, do you know what? I think we've covered everything we need to cover as far as Europe is concerned. I think we're going to have our own competition now and play some music, then come back and play some more TikTok. So, for me, Graham Zimley, from Terry Fenner and Jan Gilman, it's goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @TheSoundOfFootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
For another thrilling, thrilling instalment of Sound of Football Top Trumps. Last week, you'll know that Terry won back control of the deck. It was quite fraught, actually, wasn't it? You were backed into a corner there, weren't you, Jan, with your card? They just didn't come up for you, did it?
It didn't. I thought it was a turning point. I thought greatness was once again upon me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
No.
It was just humiliation.
And now we're just back into the Terry tyranny again.
My reign of terror continues.
Yes.
Although I don't know whether or not for how long here. I'll tell you who I've got. I've got Iker Casillas this time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, yeah, it just can be limiting in its options. However,
there are some options there, but yeah, probably quite
outstanding. So obviously career goals is out. Trophies is good. Sorry about that. Caps is obviously good, and height as well, being a goalkeeper, you're going to be happy about a goalkeeper's height.
I can't believe this.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go for height this time around. I don't know whether or not he's one of the tallest guys out there, goalkeepers out there, but I'm going to go for height. Because I know we get some quite heavyweight players there in terms of caps in this top 25. And in terms of trophies as well, they are after all European superstars.
They are European
superstars after nothing.
Yes, they are European superstars as of the 30th of March 2012.
Plus Scott Parker.
And
so I'll go for height, folks, yeah. And that's a 185, so I should put that later.
185, same height as me. Right, okay. However, my player, or the listener's player, isn't at all. He is the rather diminutive Wayne Rooney at 176.
And I was really hoping that it would be career goals because I've got Karim Benzema.
You'd have lost to me then.
I lost to Rooney. But anyway, he's 182, three centimetres can make a hell of a difference.
Just about an inch, isn't it?
Full of a man, isn't he? Yes.
Wayne
Rooney, 220 career goals. A lot of my Twitter timeline is like how rubbish he is. It does appear to score quite a lot of goals.
He's actually quite good. Join us again next time for some more Sound of Football Top Trumps.
You wouldn't believe what I've got next week.
Oh, God. I've really got to check his deck. I think he just puts all the good ones up there.